You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 25th of January, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. We're not actually live this week. This is pre-recorded, but we do have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I think I'm doing better than you, Sven. You got some hassle this week, pal, haven't you?
Yeah, just a bit. A lot of slanderous comments, basically, in the Daily Mail. I mean, we did cover this in a podcast earlier this week, if people are interested in Aryan Britannia. But one sort of question I do have is they put a picture at the top, and I'm just wondering whether they contacted those people that are in that photograph that the Daily Mail decided to call Sven Longshanks. You would hope they did actually get permission first. Yeah, you would hope that they did, you know, make certain who those people were and ask their permission. I'm sure they did. They wouldn't do anything like break the law at the Daily Mail, would they?
Yeah, I'm sure they did everything in the right communist way.
Yeah, I'm sure everything's above board, and that article appearing on that day, I'm sure that had nothing whatsoever to do with the storyline in EastEnders featuring Nazis spraying swastikas on a Jew's front door. Yeah, and nothing to do with hope not hate, desperately trying to prevent people from listening to us. I mean, it's had the opposite effect. It doubled our listeners, basically, and all the comments.
Well, I thought it would do, yeah.
Yeah, well,
I thought it would. They won't put Antifa people upon, unmask them people, will they?
No, they won't expose the people that blow up the Alternative for Deutschland offices, make assassination attempts against an Alternative for Deutschland politician, the people that mob handed violently attacked the Wessex Forum, left a lady with a black eye, punched her elderly husband, disabled husband, who died a few months later. And they turned up with motorcycle chains. Nothing's done about that. They don't expose that sort of thing. Yeah. They just want to complain about people that have different opinions to them. One thing that actually I was really pleased with, if you look at the comments, every single comment bar one is positive.
Yeah, I did. So, yeah. Thanks for letting us know. I didn't know this radio were on air.
Yeah, and I don't think they weren't our listeners, because those comments were there before I even saw it. And I certainly haven't said to people to go and leave comments on there. I think that's the general public. Yeah. I think they completely misread. You know, they completely misread the public opinion of these things. Otherwise, totally. They wouldn't do it. Because it just increases our listeners. Anyway, yeah, if listeners do want to hear a response to that, myself and Max Musson, we went right through the whole article in Aryan Britannia earlier this week. So do check that out. But getting back to tonight's program, we've got masses and masses of questions and comments that were left on the last episode that you did, Dennis. I think it was about 400, something like that. Masses of comments.
Extremely popular video.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to get into some of those.
I think it brought the history with the modern together. People could actually see, just exactly what had been going on when it come together with this trailer, I thought.
Yeah, mixing the two together. And we've got, these comments tonight, they're all varied. They're all on good subjects. I mean, the first one's a practical one. This is from Robert Pershall. He says, I am currently wanting to buy video sets for The Greatest Story Never Told, as well as Communism by the Back Door, but have never used Bitcoin before and could not use my credit card on your website. What can I do? So first off, Dennis, is there a problem with credit card processing at the website at the moment?
Well, I'm pretty sure there is. I think last time I spoke to someone, the only way you could get one was by Bitcoin, but Bitcoin's not as popular as what people are made out to be. So you know, not a lot of people use it, and so they're a bit desperate to try and get over copy. We're trying various means, and, you know, I mean, I honestly think that we're being pushed more and more towards the dark web, to be honest. More doors are being shut every day. The control they have over Stripe and over PayPal tends me to think that's the way we're going. But until we can sort some definite, the only way is for now is for Bitcoin. And it's not an ideal way because, like I said, you know, there's not much use for Bitcoin other than if you want someone on the web as well.
Well, you would hope that your team sort out one of these other credit card processors and just work your way through all the different credit card processors. But as far as Bitcoin is concerned, most people, I think, they don't use it because they don't really understand how to use it. And there are two ways that you could, there are two ways that you could purchase DVD videos from Dennis's website. You can either set up your own Bitcoin wallet, and buy some Bitcoin, which will go into your Bitcoin wallet. And then you can send it from your Bitcoin wallet to, Dennis's shop's wallet. Or you could just buy some Bitcoin from a vendor and instruct them to deposit it into Dennis's wallet. And all the Bitcoin wallet is a string of numbers. So they're not going to know where that Bitcoin is going. If you're buying some Bitcoin from a vendor, they have no idea who's at the other end of the Bitcoin wallet. It's not possible for them to tell. So it is anonymous. It's not like you're telling somebody that you want them to send the Bitcoin to Greatest Story Never Told. You're just telling them you want them to send it to a string of numbers. And you can do that at various places. You can exchange hard currency through your credit card for Bitcoin and then get the people to deposit that Bitcoin into Dennis's wallet. You can do it at places like CoinGate. There's another one called CryptoPay.me, and there's another one called LocalBitcoins.com. And I think with them, some of them, they require verification. You have to show your identity as if you were setting up a bank account. But again, it doesn't matter if you're doing that because you still can't be linked to where that Bitcoin is actually going. In actual fact, I think with the localbitcoins.com, you don't actually have to even send any verification. Another way you can do it is if you have an eBay account, you can buy some Bitcoin from a Bitcoin vendor on eBay. But do beware, on eBay, they do charge inflated prices for the Bitcoin. If you go to one of the more well-known ones, then they're not going to charge you an inflated price. In fact, you can link your bank account up to blockchain or any of these major ones, and then you can just transfer some funds from your account to the Bitcoin wallet, and then you can purchase something from Dennis. And it's not just Truthful Out Films that require Bitcoin. I mean, the whole of the alt-right, all nationalists now, the only way we have to receive funds is through Bitcoin. So it's going to benefit people to do that. It means that they can help out people in the movement because everyone is very short of funds.
Mm-hmm.
So you haven't actually sorted out
that.
You haven't actually sorted out Bitcoin wallet for yourself yet then, Dennis?
No. I mean, I had it going at one point and then other things of importance overtook me, so to speak. And it's it can get me going as well, you know. It's I'm on a computer all day, more or less. And you need a break at times, and sometimes you can't do the things you want to do for different reasons.
It does take a bit of time to research, but hopefully that will help future customer out there that wants to buy your DVDs. Next comment is Federica Taparola. And she says, "Good evening, Dennis. I give my heartfelt congratulations. I would really like to write an email. Where did you find the news about Hitler and Freemasonry and the news about Wevelsburg Castle and the Black Sun?" So where did you find that out, Dennis?
Well, firstly, I mean, I went through many, many, many days and nights trying to convince people that Hitler wasn't a Freemason a few years ago. And people who just weren't having it at all, that they'd been convinced that this uniform that Goebbels had and what Goering had and was all Freemasonry. But eventually, we found enough details and... sorry, did I drop out again?
No, you're fine.
All right, sorry. Eventually, I managed to get enough information, mainly from an occult site, which listed all the lodges closed, And then, lo and behold, we find he closed lodges, whichever country that the National Socialists went into. So that now really is a dead comment now, because you know, people do realise that he was an enemy of Freemasonry, and also now with this episode of why he was an enemy of Freemasonry. And this other information, what I found, came originally from a website a few years ago, which I just happened to remember. And when I went to look for it, it had been wiped off. But fortunately, there was a PDF made of the information that they gathered, and I managed to download that from archive.org. More luckily, by chance than anything. And in it is a wealth of information backed up with the photographs of the SS standing on guard, showing Hitler looking at the Roman Empire jewels, crown jewels. And just a fascinating piece there, which he's never touched on at all.
Well, I also think the sort of pagan connotations for the Black Sun, they didn't come out until very recently. They weren't really sure what that symbol represented on the floor of Vevelsburg Castle. And it just seems clear to me that it's showing a light that no man can see. It's a symbol for that. And the light that no man can see is Christ. It tells you that in the Bible. Yes. So that's a symbol for the spirit of life. It's not...
it's not even black, it's green, I think.
Yeah, it's just showing, it's trying to symbolize something. It's obviously a symbol for something. It's obviously a sun, but it's the negative of a sun. And the sun is material, so that's obviously spiritual. That's what the sun gives us life on earth, and God is actually what gives us the spiritual life and eternal life, and that's what it's a symbol for. They weren't pagan. They were,
Christian. People say that, the pagan, when they say, well, look at the swastika. But the swastika has been used in different, religious realms, if you like, and Christianity was one of them. You know, it's been a Christian symbol. And the Jews have always reacted to it as Dracula does to a cross. They just back off from a swastika, as they explained once in a documentary I saw in India.
Yeah, it's a symbol for purity. It's a symbol for purity. And again, that's why it's used by Christians, you know, to be pure of heart. And obviously used before Christianity, but then used by Christianity as well, because it symbolizes parts of the Christian religion. And there are plenty of instances of it on churches and in sculptures, on church buildings, all over the place. Okay, next one is from Ron Putin. He says, Dennis, I'm of the thinking now that Kristallnacht was a Zionist organized false flag. It makes no sense the Germans would have done it. They had nothing to gain, especially as on the date, high-ranking NSDAP officers were in Munich on the 8th, 9th of November for the annual commemoration of the Beer Hall Push. And this is very interesting, actually, what actually happened on Kristallnacht. Did you get a chance to read that CODO document on it, Dennis?
I didn't read it all. I read some of it, but I've always been of the belief that it's something what was overrated anyway. It was only happened just for one day or one night. And yet when you remind of it so often, you seem to think that it was over a period of time. Whereas this is just one incident. And at the time, Goebbels and Hitler were trying to sort out this world blockade in meetings. And weren't happy about events, and called an end to it, which did happen. That's the reason that I've always understood it as. In one hand, I know what Ron Putin is saying, but on the other hand, if you're living with a community, in your country, which internationally now has declared war on you, you're not going to be looked upon in a great light, especially when it comes to light, what happened in World War I. And the stab in the back. So does it surprise me a synagogue was burning? No. Does it surprise me windows were broke? No. But then again, you know, it only happened for a day. So it must have been called off at some point, because it would have gone on forever.
Well, looking at the CODO documents on it, you've got a German that's looked through all the records of what happened. And it's very strange, actually. I mean, Hitler was so furious at it that he couldn't bear to have it mentioned in front of him. Goebbels was totally against it. They were all totally against it. They were all really, really shocked by it. And it looks like strangers appeared because everybody was in Munich. All the important people were in Munich. The people, the Gauleiters, and the people that were at their posts weren't really that important. And some strangers appeared and claimed to be from the SS, and they went to the SA, which the SS was nothing to do with the SA anyway. And they said, we've got orders that we've got to start smashing windows and setting fire to synagogues tonight. And most of them didn't go along with it. And then there was a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and they still haven't ascertained who it was by, because in the Nuremberg trials, they just blamed, the NSDAP for it. But there was a strange phone call at 3 in the morning, ordering somebody to do this. And this one person did it. And then others joined in. And it also happened just after the assassination of the German ambassador in Paris by this Jew. And the excuse has always been that this 17-year-old Jew did this because his parents had been removed from Germany to Poland. But he'd left his parents years ago. He didn't really want anything to do with them. And a very, very rich and top lawyer stepped in straight away and said that he was his responsibility and protected this guy. And this lawyer was to do with a French organization against anti-Semitism. So it looks like this was set up as a prevarication of killing the killing the German ambassador and then setting up these pogrom in Germany to make the Germans look really bad, because apparently the world's media wasn't quite behind the Jews at the time. And also that afterwards, and this gets reported, that Goering then fined the Jews 1 billion Reichsmarks to pay for the damage. Now, the Jews had put Germany under boycott since 1933, and this happened in 1938. So there'd been 5 years worth of world boycott by the Jews declaring war on Germany. And in order to repair the plate glass in these windows, that had to be procured from Belgium, which would have meant using up all the last of the foreign currency reserves that they had. So it's the logic was, well, the Jews have put us under a boycott so that we can't purchase this in any other way. So the Jews themselves can pay for this. And it was only Jews that had over 500,000 Reichsmarks a year, or over 500,000 Reichsmark savings, that had to pay the fine. So it was only, you know, millionaires that had to pay this fine. So there are quite a few things there that most people don't know about. But yes, it does look like it was a false flag. It was deliberately done to make the Germans look bad, basically, because it wasn't something.
Forced us of synagogues burning around Europe caused the reaction, didn't it?
I think there was only one synagogue that was burning as well. And the next day, all the Jews just sent their kids to school the same as normal, which you wouldn't have done if you were terrified that they were all going to get pogromed. It's very strange. And there was orders sent out straight away. This has all got to be stopped. This is absolutely, absolutely dreadful. I think it was a false flag. It's a very good document, and you'll find it on Kodo. Something about Kristallnacht. I can't remember the exact.
The way they played on it, you know, it's only one night and everybody knows about it. You know what I'm trying to say? Where all these other programs, you know, come and go. So there must be something behind that, what you're saying.
Okay, the next comment is from John Richardson. He says, "Hey Dennis, can you go into more detail about the SS foreign divisions, such as the Spanish Blue Division, for example, and the rat lines to Argentina? Also, if Zionist and Freemasonry had corrupted the Roman Catholic Church, wouldn't their first target be the Jesuits and the Orders of Malta? Lastly, thank you for all your hard work." So do you want to talk a bit more about SS foreign divisions and the rat lines to Argentina first?
Yeah, I mean, I think Bishop Williamson didn't realise that this had occurred. In fact, there's so much been hidden, as this particular documentary shows. But certainly the Spanish Blue Division, I think they numbered up to between 50 and 80,000. They'd just come off the back of a civil war. So Franco, Spain was in chaos, you know, as far as entering another war. But he did allow these to go and fight on the Eastern Front when the coalition, so to speak, invaded the US, sorry, USSR. So these people sampled what communism really was during that civil war. and the atrocities carried out, and the churches burnt and the religion under fire, which without Adolf Hitler, they would have gone under, there's no doubt. And so these people gladly went into the Soviet Union along with Hitler and all the other Christian countries. As far as the other foreign divisions, this was like a bit of genius by Hitler, if you like. He put a call out to Europe to say that you could join the SS from your own ranks of your own countries, and immediately thousands upon thousands of youths around Europe who obviously knew the threat of communism, which we never really did in Britain, apart from maybe the John Amrys higher up in the league. So that these people rallied to the cause because they didn't want communism neither. And suddenly they've got a vehicle now to ride on. And so, Norway and all these other places all formed an SS regiment, Belgium, and joined Germany in the fight. And it was a huge coalition of Christian Europe joining together to try and defeat this communist threat. But the problem was the threat was coming from the other side as well, with Britain and America. So, in the end, for the size of the task, they just didn't have enough manpower.
Yeah, the Waffen-SS was formed to fight in the East against Bolshevism. I can talk a little bit about the Latvian Legion. They were absolved of all crimes at Nuremberg because they just did fight in the East against the Bolsheviks. And they were actually put in place as guards over the NSDAP at Nuremberg. And yet today, when the Baltic countries wish to celebrate their heroes in the war that fought against communism, Russia does all it can to prevent that from happening. And the European Union banned them from having a bank holiday on that day, and Antifa go there and try to cause problems for them, and they get actually stopped at the border because these men were great heroes, and they fought the communists, they fought the Bolsheviks, they gave their lives when the Red Army was advancing so that the Baltic peoples could escape from those Baltic states. So the Waffen-SS was just formed to go against the Bolsheviks. It wasn't formed to go against Jews, it was formed to go against Bolsheviks. But the fact was, 90% of the Bolshevik leadership were Jews.
Were Jews.
That's the point.
We covered a while back about the British forces over there, and I was reading through a bit again the other night, and there was a regiment in Berlin in the final days who fought more or less down to the last man in Berlin. They held up a Russian regiment, 100 soldiers, Russian soldiers killed, several tanks were blown up. And the Russian commander actually turned around and said, I hope the British recognise that a brave man is a brave man, whether he's a traitor or not, because he said these deserve the Victoria Cross.
Yeah, and anyone that's interested in learning about the Waffen-SS, I think probably the best film is Leon de Grel's one. I forget the exact title. Is The Magnificent Waffen-SS or something like that?
Yes. Well, yeah.
Well, this the second part of this question, if Zionism and Freemasonry have corrupted the Roman Catholic Church, wouldn't their first target be the Jesuits and the Orders of Malta? I think that the Jesuits, I mean, they were around before the Zionists, and the Jesuits were started by a converso Jew. So the Jesuits were really a Jewish operation right from the very start, and they were around before Zionism. So
That's right. I watched a movie, the most boring movie I've ever seen for a while, to be honest, about Loyola before he actually became a Jesuit. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
And this idea that it's a Jesuit conspiracy. The Jesuits are responsible for a lot of the corruption in the Catholic Church, but they were started by converso Jews. So they're sort of beneath the
Francis
Jews.
Is one.
Yeah,
he's a Jesuit. Yeah,
so they're the ones pushing homosexuality. Yeah, they're the ones pushing for the homosexuality in the church, according to E. Michael Jones. John Richardson says, "It sickens me what the modern church has become. My family have fought the communist threat since the Spanish Civil War, World War II, and lastly, Vietnam. But what puzzles my elders most is how communism was able to get into the USA and Latin America so easily. That's a good question.
Well, I suppose it is. I mean, in America's case, it was in probably, you know, 1800s, even possibly before already, you know. So when Patton actually saw reality and rightly said that communism is going to be taking us over if we don't do something, he didn't realise it had already been in the country for at least a century.
It was a thing, because you had the Jews were basically taking control in America, and communism is a Jewish operation. That's how communism was able to get in there, and also because it was funded entirely by these American Jewish bankers in Russia. So it was already had these connections, and then you had people like Father Coughlin that fought against it. Various organizations in America, the John Birch Institute. The McCarthy hearings, there was a right wing that was trying to fight against it, but there was also the cultural Marxism. There wasn't just the workers of the world unite and overthrow your oppressors. It was, we're going to raise up these ethnic minorities and we're going to attack every part of white Western culture which took over the universities.
Fund them.
Yeah, so it was a different form of communism by later on. It was a different form of it that had just taken over all academic thinking.
Yeah, Martin Luther King was a communist, wasn't he? You know, so all that black movement, that's all communist funded or Jewish funded.
I guess the best book to read about that would be Kevin MacDonald's Culture of Critique, that explains the Frankfurt School and cultural Marxism and how the Jews subverted the morals of America. Because that's really the communism that we have now is... It's
every faction, education, churches, you know, jobs, all areas, music industry, acting, they aim for all control of all these areas, and before you know it, you can't move without having to abide to their rules.
And it's a different form of communism that we have now as well. So while they were fighting against the old form, the new form was taking control. And then you had the neocons as well, who started out being Trotskyites. Yes. And then suddenly moved to the right wing, but at the same time was still promoting diversity and minorities and all the rest of it. So it was
a revolution.
Yeah, that's how it managed to get into America. Latin America. How did it get into Latin America?
Well, that's an interesting one. I mean, there were some countries down there like Argentina at the time. America actually forced Argentina to join the war. It didn't actually go on any fronts to fight, but it was just this combination of 50 countries around the world that were attacking Germany. But Argentina didn't really want to do, as you know, because they took a lot of these people from Europe after. But eventually even Argentina went under the communists. So they must have a way of getting in there down there. And I know you had Che Guevara was in Bolivia when he was killed eventually. There was a lot of infiltration from a lot of places. I think Cuba was one of them. And they were also fighting down in Africa, the Cuban forces. So it's a worldwide thing, isn't it? It's a virus.
In Africa, the communists were funding these black terrorist groups, basically. But I think part of it in Latin America was also the way that the Jews infiltrated the Catholic Church and then started promoting, I think it was called liberal theology in South America, which is what Francis was a big part of. So they subverted the Catholic Church, and where the Catholic Church was so big in South America, they were at that. That's how they were able to do it, or that played a large part of it. And that's what these right-wing South American governments were against. That's why, there was a famous priest that got killed that Francis made into a saint recently. And he was part of the gun runners for these leftist communists. So
sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah. They
interestingly enough, in Communism by the Back Door, I found out evidence of, you know, South Africa, white South Africa. Ronald Reagan actually had a... what did they call them, an order written saying that South Africa was the country that was most dangerous to America, an executive order. And that's why it's South Africa. So there, again, Reagan and Thatcher showing to be one thing on one side, but on the other side are pushing for Mandela.
Yeah, this was the changing of Mandela from a terrorist into a saint, basically. The guy was a terrorist. He was setting bombs off and wanted to kill white people.
Correct.
And now he's looked at as a saint. He could have been released from prison at any time if he had renounced violence. And he refused to renounce violence right up to the end. So what does that tell you about these modern-day heroes that we're given? And there's even a statue of him in London. The man is a terrorist. He killed scores of white people.
The statues of Martin Luther King are communists. The statues of Albert Pike. You know, all these. There's a reason all these statues are up there. And in fact, I mean, they even had one, I think it was in Poland, of showing the Russians raping a woman, which got removed eventually. But I mean, how bad does it get?
Yeah, wasn't that one done deliberately and left on the steps? Just to try and wake people up to what the Red Army did?
I'm not sure about that. It was a big statue to have done for that.
Yeah, I think it was.
I mean, you know, the fact is, this soldier was raping a woman.
Yeah, I think that's why it was done. It was done to say, look, this is what really happened. And they hid it pretty quick. I think it was left on the steps of a museum or something.
Yeah,
I may be wrong. I may be wrong, but... In
Germany, they're not allowed to mourn the dead of World War II, at least publicly. But yet, there's huge memorials to the Red Army in Germany. So, you know, it doesn't take much to work out who's really in charge.
Yeah, they never had a chance. You imagine the psychological damage caused by that, by never being able to mourn your dead and not able to discuss what actually happened with those prison camps where they were starved to death, the Morgenthau plan. And it's all just hidden from the majority of the German people. But the psychological scars are there because the grandparents were scarred by it.
Yeah.
The parents were scarred by it. And, you know, the kids today are still scarred by it. It's great psychological damage.
You've gone missing again.
Well, I can hear you okay here, Dennis.
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah, it's all sounding fine here. The next comment is from Adrian Chetwind. He says, pagan occultism is not the same as Freemason occultism. And then he quotes Stolen Knowledge. And I thought this was interesting because his next comment is, my message to the foolish Christians is, check out the Torah. And basically, I mean, this guy's been fooled. He says pagan occultism is not the same as Freemason occultism. The occult is the occult. Whether it's white magic, whether it's black magic, it all essentially comes from the same source and it will lead you astray. And sure enough, his next comment proves that he's been led astray because he's saying check out the Torah. The Jews have two Torahs. It's a big scam. You know, the Torah Shebuel Pat and the Torah something Rick Tov. One of them is the Talmud, and the other is the first five books of the Bible. And the Christians think that when the Jews talk about the Torah, they mean the first five books of the Bible. They don't. They mean the Talmud. And the Talmud is the most anti-Christian book that's ever been produced. Most Christians are foolish, but saying check out the Torah, I mean, check out the first five books of the Bible. They're brilliant. No race mixing, no adultery, no homosexuality, no usury, no allowing foreigners into your lands, no allowing foreigners to rule over you. Don't use usury against your brother. I mean, the first five books of the Bible are brilliant. And you've got people that are cursed because they take on the wrong wife. You've got somebody that's given an eternal priesthood because they spear through two race mixers with a spear while they're actually on the job and avert a huge plague from hitting Israel. I mean, that's not Jewish. That's not Jewish. I mean, the Jews are a mixed race. They follow the Talmud, not the Torah. So this guy's been misled. And the more he gets into the occult, the more he will be misled and the more he won't actually see the truth because that's the way that it works. It's very, very subtle.
Yeah, well, I've had many comments with this guy. Like he's, you know, it's been a Christian pagan battle with myself and him. But what people don't realise is that I don't think there is an occult religion anywhere which doesn't have a sacrifice somewhere in there, a human sacrifice. Always has been. And somebody was mentioning about the, I think it was a Norwegian Navy the other day, they've allowed some people to become pagan. I mean, and they're all shouting Odin. And as far as I'm concerned, it's the same as Zeus in all these Greek mythology and other areas, that Zeus and Odin, the Satan, or sons of Satan, and yet people are willing to go and dump Christianity, which has protected them for 1,000 years from invasions and other things. Suddenly, now they go running off to these little pagan units thinking it's cool.
Well, it's New Age is what it is, because there is no continuing tradition of paganism. Paganism evolved into Christianity. This is why we still have sacred sites that were in use in our pre-Christian days by pagans that are still in use today by Christians. This is why Father Christmas has all the symbology of Odin, because Odin grew into Father Christmas. When people today try to say, well, we're following Odin, they're not. They're following New Age ideas that have been created today, and this is why it's promoted by the mainstream. This is why they promote all this pagan stuff, all this witch stuff.
World order, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like in the prisons, they will... If you're a pagan, they'll allow you to have robes and a wand and all this sort of stuff. You try telling them that you're a Christian identity and you want a Christian identity pastor. They won't allow you to have any of that. Not at all. But they're quite happy for you to your Odinic stuff and your blutes and all the rest of it. There's a reason for that. Okay. Trump Licana says, what does the G stand for in the Masonic symbol? I've looked it up online and I'm not buying it that it stands for God or geometry. And I think I may have a different idea about this. Yeah, I think I may have a different idea about this to you, Dennis. So you go first. And what do you think the G stands for?
I think it stands for the core religion of Freemasonry, which is Gnosticism.
So you think it stands for Gnosticism?
Yes.
I think it probably does stand for Gnosticism, and it probably does stand for God as well. But I think when you look at it, a G is a spiral. It's circular. It's not angular. So it's female. It's feminine. When you think of the swastika, that's square, isn't it?
You're on the right track here, I think.
Yeah, it's square and it's got angles to it. Whereas the G is a spiral. I think it's female. It's saying it's goddess worship essentially, and feminism.
Yeah, that's quite possible. But so Gnosticism is the core religion as well. So probably both are true in a sense.
And the word for God would be D for Deus. Not G. Yeah. It would be a D. So there's that as well. So I think it's a female thing, because that's always a part of it.
Yeah.
And again, that's a part of the pagan idea. It's adding equality to religion. It's adding feminism to religion, saying, oh God, God must have a goddess, which is it's just cultural Marxism in religion.
Well, I think the Jews believe that God is androgynous. Just like Baphomet.
That's a part of the Kabbalah, isn't it? It's a part of the Kabbalah. It's a blending of opposites. There's no real good. There's no real evil. Blend everything together, and that plays out in society today with equality, saying that everybody is equal. That's applying the Kabbalah to the ordering of society, trying to raise up what's low and bring down what's high, basically.
What's high, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, because that's the only way you can do it.
The blending of the opposites and moral relativism. The next one, Bellagia Comabella says, I thought it was the Jews. And I'm guessing that's because, because you're exposing the Freemasons. So what's your answer to that
one? Somebody said... I thought Dennis was using Freemasonry instead of Jews, so he wouldn't get banned. But obviously, I think it was Rabbi Wise in 1800 sometimes actually turned around and said, without Judaism, Freemasonry, there's nothing left. So it's obviously Freemasonry is a Jewish movement as such, hidden behind a curtain, using Goyim to promote their interests in revolution.
Hey, you have to think, before the French Revolution, Jews didn't have civil rights. So what they did, they infiltrated Freemasonry, and then they could get the Goyim in the Freemasonry to advocate for the Jews, basically. So they were like Jewish puppets. I mean, the Germans have done this research into it, and they said, well, Freemasonry started out as an Aryan endeavor, and then the Jews subverted it. But if you really look into it, I mean, all the symbology, it's always been Jewish. I mean, we did a program on it, didn't we, Dennis? And we linked it to Herod and the head of John the Baptist. And it was Herod's temple. Yeah, and Herod's temple, not Solomon's temple, but Herod's temple that was the devil's temple. And these Templars and you know, this mysticism that the Templars supposedly got, well, where did they get it from? They got it from the Jews.
Yeah,
when they were out there in the Middle East, Jews and Muslims,
the Crusades.
Yeah, so it's been there right from the beginning. This Jewish influence with Freemasonry, and what you're showing is how the Jews have used Freemasonry, I guess.
Yeah.
Rampager Wren says, "By the way, a warning to all Americans here. Someone posted a YouTube video that the Blood Red Moon will happen January 19th, 2019, and it will last for 6 months of darkness. The rapture is coming." Well, the rapture didn't come. This is why you need to be aware of these things. Yeah, the Red Moon did, and so did the Millennium, and so did the Comet, and all these things. Yeah. It says in the Bible that you won't know when the last day arrives. So don't pay any attention to, you know, these doom mongers that are saying the end of the world is going to come, because nobody knows when that day arrives.
Exactly.
Snotter Frecky, I think that's probably a Swedish name, says, "Hey Dennis, what do you think of the Saturn stuff?" What is the Saturn stuff, Dennis?
Well, for far as I can gather, I know Freemasonry is heavily into astronomy. And Saturn is believed to be Satan, a connection there. So I don't know any much more about it, because I don't really believe in astronomy. But you have to understand, if these people do, it matters little what I think. So there's a case, for instance, how can I explain this one? There's a period. 9/11, for instance, right? People, it's a certain number, 9/11, which is important to the Freemasons. And one of the reasons given is that because they're into this astronomical agenda, that at a certain time, there's two clusters of stars meet. I can't remember what one's called, but the other one is the King of Kings are called. And these two lots of stars join on a certain day, which is 9/11, and a lot of people believe that that is the true day that Jesus was born, and not on Christmas Day. And so for them to do something like 9/11 on that day, bring down all this destruction and terror, pure Satanism, on Jesus's, what they believe is Jesus's real birthday, you know, I can see where they're coming from. But whether or not it's true or not, I can't say.
Well, I think they definitely do things time to fit in with whatever the stars are doing. I think the symbology of Saturn, I think there's a bit with a sickle, and there's a link to the hammer and sickle flag of the communists. That is linked to Saturn in some way. And I think maybe Kronos might be linked with Saturn, and Kronos ate all his children. Yeah, he was something to do with death and...
Interestingly enough, you know, the forces in World War II, the Soviets and the Americans, say, for instance, on the tanks, they both had the same star, only one was white and one was red, if you get the meaning. You know, it was the same force.
Yeah, if you look for countries that use the star, it's usually negative. I don't think Britain's ever used it. I don't think Britain's ever used it.
I think Bosnia were one of the last. and the EU decided to bring out a flag for them. They weren't happy with it.
China and communism uses it. That five-pointed star, the pentagram, that's an occult symbol.
Yeah.
The same as the six-pointed star, which was sort of hijacked by the Jews, really, that six-pointed one. It's got nothing to do with Solomon.
Yeah.
The next one is from Alternate Account. Lowell Dennis, I believe Hitler was the good guy in World War II, but this stuff about the Masons, if they held this much power, why are they even bothering to wait for a new world order? I mean, since they're already in control in most countries, it may as well already be a world government. That, and the fact that Andrew Jackson fought the bank, but the documentary says he was a Mason. So, I know my thoughts on this. What are yours?
Well, first Freemasonry goes, I mean, you look around even now, how they can control the finances of the right. You know, they're cutting us off at every corner. So they have a certain amount, a certain degree of power, but I don't think they've got all the power until all the countries, all the sovereign countries are down. Then I think we'll feel the full force of it. But places, you know, they're still about, I think three countries don't have a central bank, but, and one of them's Cuba, so probably two really we're talking about. So, until that happens, and when that happens, I think we'll feel the full force then.
Well, I think you got good people involved and you got bad people involved in Freemasonry. And when you look at what happened with the Bolsheviks, that was when the evil guys involved in Freemasonry used Freemasonry to take over. That was Freemasonry in full control. It was used to take over with.
When I breathe, yeah.
Yeah, but and what we have now is that they don't quite have full control. There are still good people that are involved in government that struggle against it. We're still able to have these conversations. We're not sent off to the gulag. We've still got nationalist parties. We've still got churches operating. We've got a lot more freedom than they had in Russia. So the Masons don't quite have full control, but they do have members in all these offices and all these important positions. They are Masons, but they're not all part of this evil, corrupt side of Masonry that know the truth behind it. So that would be my way of looking at it.
Well, there is a need to know level, I think. I mean, if I'm talking to a Freemason about all this, he probably thinks I'm from outer space because he's only allowed to know so much and intended to know, be deceived and know so much, as Albert Pike admitted. But all he has to do is read up Pike and a few of the others. And it's not only Jews involved, but Satanists as well. These are people who adore the devil. And they've taken over Freemasonry. And there will be a day when, you know, once the wars with Iran and Russia and all these are all over, we'll end up and see who is in power.
All these secret societies are involved in it. They were all pushing for revolution in the 19th and 20th century, Rosicrucians, Skull and Bones, the Illuminati, the OTO, the Order of the Temple Orientis, Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
They're all sort of variations on a theme. All variations on a theme, yeah. and it's all about superseding God, Gnosticism, elevating man, elevating man as a divinity. Man can make his own laws. Man can make his own morals. It's all about turning the natural order on its head, basically. So it's all these various groups that are involved in it.
Yeah.
Okay. The
Skull and Bones, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. What about this bit about Andrew Jackson? Because he fought the bank, it says.
Well, what it was, the commentary on the video I used, they claimed that he was responsible for the Trail of Tears. And certainly Andrew Jackson's government was around at the time of the Trail of Tears and et cetera. So somebody must have given the order. And if the president doesn't give the order, then who does give the order? But on the other hand, there's been some work done by a revisionist who claims that he was against the banks and he wasn't a Freemason. But it's all very much in the air. But it weren't my decision to say Andrew Jackson was a Mason. This woman who was doing the commentary on the Crowley footage actually said, named a few things. I mean, she missed a lot out as well, but she named a few things which she thought were responsible for Freemasonry. And I couldn't argue with it at the time because I'd done a little bit on Andrew Jackson before and nobody seems to know whether a Mason or not.
Well, you also got the case of Henry Ford. We know that he was a Mason. Yeah, he was really good. Yeah. He was a really good guy. So, there are plenty of good guys around who are also Masons, but they're not a part of the Masonic conspiracy.
Well, I don't remember Parkinson and John Wayne being interviewed. And John Wayne was no lover of communism, but he was a Freemason. And often they brought these people in to make Freemason look good if they brought a major movie star. And so I don't believe John Wayne actually knew the ins and outs of Masonry, but he certainly knew the ins and outs of communism and was against it in Hollywood, particularly because that's where the producers used to, these scriptwriters would lean left, which at one point caused chaos in Hollywood because those, like John Wayne on the right, didn't want to know about this left agenda.
I think we can draw an analogy with Islam. You know, you've got the jihadis and what we call the extremists, but what they're actually doing is that is genuine Islam that they're following. And the rest are liberal progressives. They're not actually following Islam. They're ignoring parts of it. And I think it's the same with Freemasonry. The revolutionary side of it, that's the true Freemasonry. And then the charitable improvement side of it, that's the cover story for it.
Yeah, I forgot the politician there, but he wrote a book about it. And in the book, this is around about Nixon time, I think. And he wrote a book saying that the Freemasons don't get enough credit for all the revolutions they've caused. Actually says that.
Yeah, perhaps they'll erect a statue to them somewhere. Or maybe they might have done in Russia. Okay, the next one from the Savage Tiger. Hey, Dennis, the JFK files show that Hitler fled to Argentina. Any comments? Shows he didn't die in 1945. So do you know about these JFK files, what their allegation is?
Well, what I do know is the CIA and the FBI have come. They've released these papers not long back saying that Hitler was in and around South America. But if anybody... You don't trust anybody. It's the FBI and the CIA investigating Hitler. There's never been any concrete evidence. And my argument's always been, if they can catch other members, high-ranking Nazis, I'm sure they would have caught Hitler. But, I think it's just another red herring. I truly believe that.
Well, I think the Soviets tried to say they'd found his body, and it wasn't. And the body was burned to a crisp with the last little bits of petrol that were left over. But the idea that Hitler wouldn't have fallen on his sword, that goes against everything. All his writings, fighting the war, he had to. He had to fall on his sword like all the great leaders of the past did. Like the captain of the ship that's sinking, he goes down with the ship. He makes sure that he's the last man on the ship. And, if you're fighting a war, and you know that they've got you trapped. I mean, it's either you die or you become a slave. That's always the classical tradition. Either you fall on your sword or you become the slave of the victors. And he knew what those victors would have done because he knew what they did to Mussolini. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. But there is a story which I was looking into last week, actually, whereas the official version in Germany, coming from the National Socialists, was he died fighting, defending Germany, fighting communism. Now, they're saying that this person was saying, look at his war record, he's a war hero, there's no doubt of his bravery, and that actual suggestion of him fighting to the death would not surprise a lot of people. The story he said that came from the actual bunker was from an officer who was close to him who was arrested by the Russians at first, but then passed on to the British, brought to London and interrogated. And during this interrogation, he was deprived of sleep, deprived of food, the usual thing what went on over here when they brought Germans over. And he quickly realised if we're going to survive, he's going to have to think of something. And he thought of this story of the suicide in Germany, because when he was called in, are you finally ready to talk? Yes, I am. This happened. And when he was eventually freed and he went out into the world, he couldn't believe that the version about Hitler was the story that he gave under interrogation. Now, how factual that is, I haven't quite finished going into it in depth, but it's coming from a reputable source, I may add.
Yeah, I think it's really unquestionable that yes, he did kill himself, because there was no other option. That was the noble thing to do, and if he hadn't have done that, then he would have just been seen as a coward, really, someone that didn't believe in himself.
He called for the guy at Stalingrad, didn't he? That traitor out there, I can't remember his name. But anyway, he called for him to be to die on his sword. But he didn't. He just surrendered at Stalingrad and lived happily ever after in East Germany.
I mean, he had to
so
have
he was a believer on the falling on his sword.
He had to have the courage to, you know, to die himself after ordering all those people to lay down their lives for Germany.
Yeah.
You know, he had to be prepared to do the same for himself. Otherwise, he would have been a hypocrite. You know, it just seems to me that that's, you know, that was the right ending, basically, of the war.
That's the Western official version, and I went with that with the greatest story. But he also said, I mentioned the fact that some people believe he escaped to Argentina, but I quite clearly saw that his last chance to get out, he turned it down, so, you know.
Now, there are other stories. He's on a moon base, or he's in Antarctica, or
Antarctica,
in the center of the Earth, in the hollow Earth theory, and there are all sorts of theories, aren't there? Well, the next comment comes from Ryko, and he says, "What is the name of the song at the end of this part? I can't find it anywhere. And thank you, Dennis, for providing us with yet another piece of the truth hidden from us for so many years." So, what's the name of the song at the end of? Part 17.
As you know, Sven, my musical tastes have never been taught. And the music I use, even when restricted on royalty-free music, which I wasn't on the first one, I thought I'd better do it the second time. That tune is called Olympios. And it's one of them tunes which starts off quiet and raises tempo and the crescendo, and it's perfect for a documentary. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, it's great music that you use in the series. And I remember that. What's it called? The Greatest Bootleg Never Told. The collection of all the music from the first one.
We didn't actually put that on still. No.
Yeah, it's just a free MP3.
Unbelievable music.
Yeah, collection of all the music.
Yeah,
it's worth checking that out.
That kind of music was never associated with Nazi Germany. It was always, you know, the early band stuff of National Socialism, which didn't have the modern feel. But once you put that modern feel with the SS and with Hitler in that first documentary, it just opened up right in front of people's eyes.
There were a couple of modern songs on that one as well, I think, with lyrics. Wasn't there something about someone being persecuted with blue
eyes?
Leaving
Russia, we had Saga. The snow falls.
When the snow fell. There was a couple of others, though, wasn't there, which actually had lyrics to them?
There was one at the end.
Yeah, that's the one.
People ask about the one at the end for the sources, which was good. Well, I think The Who did it first, but when the Who's version and another rock band did it, it goes absolutely mental in the middle. Up to then, it was a song which I felt was really appropriate. So I went onto YouTube. I've done this before, by the way, and I'll find unknown talent, there's plenty on YouTube, I found an acoustic version, and I found another version, a bit more electric, or piano, should I say, and I joined the two together, and you probably wouldn't have noticed, but that's two unknown acts, singing that song in a mellow way, which I preferred, and was perfect for the ending, because it talks about, you know, blue eyes, and being called a liar when you're not, which associated with me with Hitler and was perfect. But if I used the rock version, it just went all Jewish in the middle.
I always wondered that, because I thought, well, I've heard this before. This is a really popular song, and yet it's talking about us. You know, it's a nationalist song. It's about nationalists and being persecuted for telling the truth. You know, so that's interesting. I'm going to check that out again once we finish.
Find the join in it, because there's a join in it, and you know, I bring one in, it takes over in the middle, and then I bring the other one back in again. But it's two acts who are probably walking around this planet now, unaware that they've been viewed by millions singing that song.
unaware that they're a neo-Nazi anthem.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I'm quite sure they'll like the version if they heard it.
I'm sure they'd appreciate the exposure. Carl Johns says, "Hey, Dennis, this is unrelated to the video, but what was Hitler's and the NSDAP opinion on Slavs? I haven't found a lot of information about it."
Well, the thing is, I answered this way. I said, when you look at the quality of life each of them had, one was definitely back in the Middle Ages, and they would have benefited more than anybody if Germany had won, because Germany would have built up Europe and you would have had, you know, proper housing, not these, you know, thatch hutches, which were basically going on in Africa at the time. And there's not a lot of information about it. He said to have said some degraded things about him. I mean, he didn't particularly like him as a fighting force, because there was no Geneva Convention or anything like that. And he just felt that... They're on the verge of just being an animal. But Leon de Grel said a little bit later on that he would begin to change his views later in life. And that's the only real place that I know where it's mentioned, to be honest. And I think he's got a book called The Enigma of Adolf Hitler.
I think in Table Talks, which the anti-Christian parts from Table Talks are discredited, but I think in that he talks a bit disparagingly of Slavs in it. But you've got to remember that at the time, yeah, there was a lot of chauvinism between the European countries. I mean, they looked down on Italians. Yeah. They looked down on the Irish. It's today when we're all facing the same threat that we tend to think, yeah, of ourselves as white brothers. Right. There was chauvinism back then. And as you say, he was going to build up the East. But the problem was, because there was this sort of chauvinism there, they didn't make use of the Slavs when they were in their nations. They should have made use of them to fight against the Soviets, but they didn't. They wouldn't allow them to have their groups fighting, which, you know, was not a very clever move, really. But as you say, I think he changed his views on them after spending more time with them. I mean, they're just the same as any other white nation, really. Slavs,
yeah,
just another breed of European. Okay, Dennis, I think we're going to have to finish here. Yeah. We'll probably check out the rest of these questions next week. So thank you very much for coming on.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.